Deloitte Private, offering audit, consulting, tax, and advisory professional services to allow private companies to address today's challenges and shape tomorrow's opportunities. Connect with us at Deloitte.com/US/private.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Hi, this is Dana Perkins, and you're listening to Switched On, the BNEF podcast. So this is the first of a series of special episodes that we'll be interspersing with our regular episodes. They'll be external guests that were actually interviewed at one of our recent BNEF summits. BNEF hosts a series of summits around the world each year, and we bring together key decision makers in the energy transition, and we talk through some of the key issues facing the transition and decarbonization. Our summit in New York City took place in April earlier this year, and this episode includes an interview conducted by my colleague Ethan Zindler, who's head of Americas for BNEF. He was privileged to sit down with none other than Mark Carney, UN Special Envoy for Climate Action and Finance, and chair of the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, or GFANZ for short. He's the author of the book Values and previously governor of the Bank of England from 2013 to 2020, as well as governor of the Bank of Canada from 2008 to 2013. Among the topics they discussed was the role and importance of corporate disclosure as it relates to climate. Please note that BNEF does not provide investment or strategy advice, and we have a full disclaimer at the end of the show. If you get to the end of this episode and you like what you hear, don't forget to hit subscribe to Switched On whatever your player you're listening to us on. Now let's hear Ethan's interview with Mark Carney.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for joining us, and it's nice to see you. Probably few feet from my office in Washington, D.C., but thanks for joining us from the Bureau down there. So we're really pleased that you're able to join us and take part in our conversation. We're 1 year, well, give or take a few weeks, since the announcement of GFANZ. Maybe give us a status update on where it stands today and what its ambitions are for the balance of the year.
First off, thank you for having me, Ethan, and your office is in good shape. I'm checking it out. Look, in terms of GFANZ, you know, over the course of the last year, we've obviously grown tremendously in terms of the number of member firms and the assets that they control. Importantly, and it's not headline news, but it's necessary to ensure that it can be as effective as possible. We've really built out the core team in GFANZ from the private sector, from the public sector, the stakeholder groups, built out the advisory panel under Nelly Gilbert's leadership, with huge additions to leadership with Mike Bloomberg as co-chair and Mary Shapiro as vice chair, and all their expertise and energy that they brought. And we're in the process of expanding its global footprint, and, you know, watch this space over the course of the next few months for more announcements on that. But at the core of what we've been doing, obviously securing members and having their core net zero commitments, what we've been doing is having hundreds of people from those member firms working on a series of initiatives around what is best practice for implementing net zero commitments. So net zero implementation plans for financial institutions, a consistent standard across financial institutions, a draft consultation on that will come out in the next 6 weeks. How do we bring consensus around sectoral pathways, the pathways towards net zero in key high emitting sectors, whether it's steel, transportation, oil and gas, and others? What is best practice for company net zero plans? In other words, what does the financial institution, financial industry expect from companies for decision useful information so that we can get capital to go to where the emissions are and get those emissions down? Again, a consultation will come out in that in the course of the next 2 months. And then very important, two other elements of that, and I'll stop here after these, Ethan, working on the approach to managing the phase out of stranded assets. We need a responsible and transparent framework to do that, so that the so-called industries that are high emitting energy sources that are causing climate change, that those can be responsibly managed down and truly be part of the transition. And then the last thing I really want to underscore, because it's critical, is a tremendous amount of work is being done to help mobilize capital at scale to the emerging and developing world, where most of the emissions are today, and where the challenges for a just transition, a secure, sustainable energy transition are the greatest.
So thanks for that overview. That's very helpful. You know, I was intrigued when GFANS got, you know, one of the major announcements around GFANS was at Glasgow, of course. And, you know, the discussion out of $130 trillion of total assets among all these 450 institutions that are involved. And yet, surprisingly to me somewhat, the initiative has generated some pushback and some complaints from environmental groups that not all the commitments are sort of ironclad. Not all the organizations have made the same level of commitments. How would you respond to some of the criticism that the initiatives received, you know, in that regard?
Well, look, the first thing is we welcome the scrutiny and welcome the high expectations. The world has been on track for a climate catastrophe. The world has been, you know, government policy, company investment, and financial institutions have been funding a world that was headed towards above 3 degrees. Now, we've started to turn with the ambitions at Glasgow by countries in the Glasgow Climate Pact of now covering 90% of global emissions with net zero objectives. We're starting to turn with leaders in industry with their initiatives and the core of the financial system. That number, 130 trillion, is 40% of global financial assets, as you know. And those assets turn over. And the key is, as those assets turn over, as loans mature, as investment decisions are made, that all of those decisions take climate change and the net zero transition into account, that they do so transparent, and so that all stakeholders can judge and see who is funding the solutions and who is still part of the problem. Now, just by joining GFANS, making the commitments, committing to the transparency, remember, there will be annual reporting of all GFANS members of their emissions, of their portfolio companies. Scope 1, Scope 2, and Scope 3 emissions where material. And, you know, one thing finance can do is count. And we'll be able to see, as I say, who's part of that solution. And all of that work I mentioned in the answer in response to your first question is to bring in a disciplined, rigorous, consistent approach to implementing those commitments.
So thanks for that clarification, and certainly look forward to the counting, the disclosure. I think Scope 3 strikes me as the real challenge in many of these cases. Since I've got you, we're going to shift topics a little bit and want to get your view on the macroeconomic picture within the context of energy, of course, as well. I mean, one of the things we've talked a lot about has been how much the entire macroeconomic situation has changed so dramatically in the last 2 months due to the conflict in Ukraine. We just wanted to get your thoughts on really how does the energy transition fit within the current picture? You know, the reaction we've seen from Washington has been to release more oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, loosen standards around ethanol temporarily, and now there's also going to be additional drilling. Do you think these are the appropriate responses, and how does this fit within a grander challenge that we have now of addressing climate change?
Well, let me go to the grander challenge since we're talking macro and within that, the energy transition. I think the first thing to say is that the horrible events and Russia's horrific invasion of Ukraine has added an additional layer, an additional challenge. But the macro environment was shifting before that. We're moving to a world of quite significant supply constraints, supply adjustments. These were much broader than short term. Part of that has to do with the nature of global integration and the reversal of many elements of that. Of course, that has been reinforced by recent events. It also has to do with the energy transition. And I think the way I'd look at the specifics of the energy transition, the consequence of Russia's invasion and the reaction to it, I'd divide it into the near term, medium and longer term. In the near term, it's not good news for the energy transition. It's not good news for our climate objectives. There will be more emissions as a consequence of this war, as a consequence of short-term scramble for energy sources that are available, readily available now, I think is a fact. And, you know, climate physics doesn't ask why carbon's being put in the atmosphere. It just subtracts it from the carbon budget. So it makes our challenge more difficult. That's the first point. The second is that the response to it, the medium-term response for material shifts in energy mixes in countries, it takes 3 to 5 years to really move the needle. And with that horizon, the judgment about which energy sources to develop, which to accelerate, which to use as bridges, clean energy performs exceptionally well with relative to conventional energy. there will be a need for additional fossil fuels, and I'll come back to that. But to be clear, clean energy, it's not just sustainable or cost effective, it's also secure once it's built. No one owns the sun and the wind, and hydrogen is literally everywhere if you're producing green hydrogen. So you see this tripling of ambition in Europe, in the UK, the up of ambition in Canada's emission reduction plan that was put out 2 weeks ago. And I think we'll see more of that because the raw economics, the realities of energy security overlap exceptionally well with the needs of sustainability. Now, the medium and longer term point about bridging, what is also required from this and the dictates of energy security will mean that there will be, in my judgment, more stranded assets. I mean, we all are familiar with the geological drivers of the stranded assets, geology meets climate physics. But what I mean is that there will be more energy sources developed that are for purposes of energy security. They will make other energy sources redundant in the fullness of time. If we are going to hold to our climate objectives, that changes the economics of those new developments again, and it reinforces the drive on clean energy. So challenges in the short term, we need to be disciplined about what we do in the longer term. And to loop it back into GFANS, we need a financial sector which is laser focused on the transition and that can responsibly finance those investments, particularly in the emerging and developing world, that are necessary to get us through this period while accelerating the investment in clean energy.
Now for a very short break. Stay with us.
At Deloitte Private, our passion for innovation creates powerful opportunities as we advise our private clients on ways to stay ahead of change, to leverage technology to drive progress, and to transform disruption into lasting value. Deloitte Private brings the service depth and breadth of Deloitte, tailored specifically to the unique demands of privately held, family-owned, and venture-backed companies. Connect with us at deloitte.com/us/private.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
So if I hear you right, are we running some risk, though? I mean, you mentioned a 3 to 5 year time horizon around the build out of large energy infrastructure, which totally makes sense. But, you know, Europe is staring at a winter coming next year where either they'll attempt to completely wean themselves off of Russia or simply dramatically reduce that reliance. How do those timelines sync up? That seems like a real fundamental challenge.
It is a fundamental challenge, and Europe is doing its best to bridge, partly through spot gas wherever they can find it, partly through very high emitting sources. I referenced coal, partly through potentially demand management, which is part of their plan. Some near-term acceleration on the clean energy, but it's limited in that time horizon. So there are big challenges. One element, as you know, that has not been put on the table has been the restarting of nuclear facilities, which could play a role here. But it is a challenge. And it's one of the reasons I said in the short term that, you know, this is not positive news. I mean, clearly it's not in any such stretch of the imagination, starting with the humanitarian. But from a climate perspective, it will use up more of the carbon budget.
It does strike me that it requires policymakers to take both a short-term and long-term view simultaneously, well, which isn't always the best thing.
Can I just reemphasize this point, though, Ethan? Because whether you're building a new LNG train, whether you're accelerating hydrogen, whether you're building major offshore wind, whether you have nuclear as part of your consideration, these are the time horizons, 3-5 years. And look at the economics of that as a policymaker. Look at the overlap between energy security and sustainability, which is virtually total once these facilities are built. And, you know, this is a horrible situation to be in, but it concentrates the mind. And I'll just underscore it, particularly for Europe, the finance is there. we've got huge balance sheets looking for these transition investments. And we've seen, and I want to give credit to the European Union and the member states, thus far, the response has been ambitious. More needs to be done, but it's headed in the right direction.
Thanks for that. We'll shift gears for one last segment of questions here. You're in Washington, of course. The Securities Exchange Commission the other day issued a fairly comprehensive bit of rulemaking around requiring companies to disclose their CO2 emission profiles and the risks, their climate risks, essentially. First, my understanding is to some degree, this was based on the Task Force for Climate Disclosure framework, which you worked on as well as Mary Shapiro and others. So congratulations on that. But second, we're in the comment period officially for that rule. I would like your comment. What do you think of that rule?
Well, it's hugely welcome that the SEC has done this. And they put out this proposed standard after a very comprehensive and detailed analysis. They've had the benefit of learning from the experience of the TCFD, which you referenced, learning from what's been done in other jurisdictions, responding to very, very significant demand from investors in the United States, financial institutions in the United States, many of whom disclose on the basis of the TCFD. But what they really want is this disclosure from the companies in which they invest and to which they lend. You know, there's $28 trillion of balance sheet that supports the TCFD. The SEC has taken it to another level in terms of the quality and the rigor. And key word that I think they really live by is decision useful. What they're putting in this standard is what investors want. And it's not just about what they want to manage the risks, although those risks are pretty significant, but it's to seize the opportunities that come with the transition, recognizing that this is a top strategic priority for most companies in America, most companies around the world, which is to get their emissions down and be carbon competitive. And events of the last 2 months have only reinforced that. So very much welcome it. Last point I'd make is that the SEC, while showing leadership, is being joined with a different, you know, a different version of a similar objective through something called the ISSB, which will cover ultimately over 130 countries other than the United States, including the rest of the G7 and G20.
The pushback, it seems, it's been on the SEC rule, and there's been different types, but one of them has been that, you know, we have something called the Environmental Protection Agency, and that's their job is to worry about CO2 emissions, and that it's not the SEC's job. So I wonder your take on that.
Well, that's nonsense, absolute nonsense. This is disclosure for financial institutions. Financial institutions want this information so that they can manage risks, seize opportunities, differentiate between companies that have a strategy to address these issues and companies that don't. And if the company doesn't, then of course the lender, the investor in them, they want to make a judgment of whether management has made the right call. And you need disclosure in order to make those judgments. You don't make it on an inference. And, you know, corporate disclosure, that's like saying the telecom regulator, the FCC, should regulate a corporate disclosure for all tech companies and telephone companies. No, the SEC's job is material corporate disclosure. It's a job that constantly evolves. What is material evolves as the U.S. economy evolves and as climate comes in, climate management and transition and the energy security issues come center stage. You know, the system has been lacking comprehensive comparable disclosure, and the SEC is rightly moved to address this.
And you rightly point out that a number of companies have embraced this, but certainly many others have not. Does this require essentially a cultural change in a number of corporations to, you know, assuming this rule does go into effect, which it looks like it's in line to do?
First off, if a company doesn't see this as a major issue, their view is that both the physical risks from climate change, the regulatory risks around it, the competitiveness issues around having a high carbon footprint or a higher carbon footprint relative to other companies in their industry, if they don't think that that's important, that, you know, they disclose that and they disclose it in a way, and then their investors and lenders make the judgment. That's the way the capital markets work. What I think you flip this around, though, which is what do the investors and the lenders want? And that's this information. I have the honor with Mike Bloomberg of co-chairing GFANZ. It's $130 trillion. Of assets in that, as you know, and included in that are all the major U.S. banks, the two largest U.S. Yeah, investors, in fact, global investors in BlackRock and Vanguard, both of whom supporters of this type of disclosure from the start. And I could give you many, many examples. And they need that information in a consistent way across companies to make the judgments of how to discharge ultimately their fiduciary duties to Americans whose money they're managing.
Well, listen, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. I'm sure it's a busy week, I know, with the meetings taking place in Washington, and really welcome your perspective on all these issues. We covered a lot of ground in exactly 20 minutes, so thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Today's episode of Switched On was edited by Rex Warner of Greystoke Media. Bloomberg NEF is a service provided by Bloomberg Finance LP and its affiliates. This recording does not constitute, nor should it be construed as investment advice, investment recommendations, or a recommendation as to an investment or other strategy. Bloomberg NEF should not be considered as information sufficient upon which to base an investment decision. Neither Bloomberg Finance LP nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this recording, and any liability of this recording is expressly disclaimed.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.